Okay, this is part two, Lionel. We're just picking up. We had to disconnect. You talking about your days at the Newhall Signal, you were going to bring up a story about the police chief?
Well, it was just kind of ironic because I don't normally hang out with cops as a living, but Scott Newhall had this incredible mansion out on the highway that goes to Piru. It's an old, it's a long story to do with that, which I won't go into, but it's one of these great Victorian type of things. And
yeah.
He used to throw parties, and we threw a lot of really great parties there in our days. And one of the people who came around quite a bit was Ed Davis. I was very surprised because I didn't, you know, was sort of the last person. He was fairly conservative. He was a cop and all that sort of
thing.
Was
he police chief at the time?
No, I think he just quit. I'm not sure of that. But,
okay.
And the thing that was most, there was a woman who was, I think she was, worked for the Chamber of Commerce, and she was this English lady, quite a beautiful, very enjoyable to be around, even though she was very conservative and a Republican, although not like today's Republicans, and their own weird breed. But anyway, she fell in love with him, and they got married, and he wanted to get out of being a conservative cop, and he had a thing for ecology.
Yeah.
And there were some areas out there which lent themselves to it. And he became a state senator. And in order to make her happy, he had nothing to do with his other activities. He was working just on ecological stuff to do with his park. And one of the things that was quite surprising about him is he liked me a lot. And one of the reasons is he liked to drink. And I think it was the drinking which made him famous. Like, he used to make this comment about how they should assassinate terrorist suspects at the airport when they do it. Well, he was obviously just getting drunk and saying the most outrageous stuff he could say. And I think some of his stuff, you know, came out of that. But that was my context. Now, I didn't know him in any other, I didn't know much about L.A. or anything like that.
Yeah, and the Western Gold scandal. Nothing about that.
No, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he was as perfectly disgusting as all L.A. cops would be.
Right. Now, what you said
but
he...
But in this case, it was the end of his life, and he was... and as I said, we both happened to love the same woman, so...
You loved her?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I was very fond of her.
What years is this before you know Nigel?
I'm not sure.
Okay, but it's close. Late 60s, early 70s, right?
Yeah, it's very close to the time I met Nigel. I think I met Nigel shortly afterwards.
Right, but the... So Ed Davis became a state senator?
Yeah, he was, a state senator or an assemblyman or an assemblyman first and a state senator.
And he focused on an ecology park?
Yeah, mostly for her.
Okay. All right, so we're talking about the Signal, and they hired you because they liked your, you know, non-conventional, that you were not right-wing.
Right, and obviously Davis used to come out to argue with us about that stuff, but it was just part of the entertainment of the times, and it wasn't as serious as things had been before.
Right. Now, there's an artist named Gerd Stern, S-T-E-R-N. You ever heard of him? Gerd Stern? Well, he did a lot in San Francisco in the 50s, and he knew Herb Cain, and he introduced...
I met Herb Cain a few times.
Right. And he introduced Lenny Bruce to Hugh Hefner. So I was wondering if Scott Newhall knew the comedian circuit or the entertainment world in...
Oh, I'm sure he probably did.
But you didn't meet... Now, that's when you're living up there in San Francisco when you're writing for him.
No. I when I wrote at the Chronicle, he was gone on his across the world in a boat.
Oh, yeah.
I was working at the Newhall Signal.
Right, that's in the middle or late 60s.
Yeah.
Then do you go to the Los Angeles Free Press next? Which is like 69, 70?
I think I went to the Free Press first.
Oh, before Newhall?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but I'm talking about John Newhall and when you did the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, that was, that would have been 68, 69. And I'm not sure what years is it, the Free Press.
Maybe 70, 71, because you wouldn't be at both places at the same time.
No, and I don't exactly remember which was first, but I think it was, frankly, it was at the Free Press first and Newhall came second.
But didn't you stay, do the LA Free Press for many years?
No, about a year.
Oh, okay. So that yeah, you were longer at the Signal.
Yeah, that was when I was playing. I was actually pretty good friends talking about a rock and roll character, Ed Sanders.
Oh, you knew the Fugs guy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to go to lunch all the time.
Because he would come out to L.A.? Or was he doing
the
Manson book?
He was working at the Free Press.
And he was doing the Manson book, right?
Yeah, right. Right,
yeah,
that's
researching
what we talk about all the time.
Right, so you were working at the LA Free Press at that time when he was there?
I believe, yeah.
Manson is August 69, so we're talking the fall of 69. I assume Ed got out there and started looking into it.
Probably.
So that would be, there's your date. And now you're saying Newhall was after that?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see.
I'm presuming so, although I thought it was 68, 69, and I went to Newhall. But
yeah, I mean, were you at... See, if Ed Sanders was working at the LA Free Press, when you were there working at the LA Free Press, that has to be fall of 69, because he's out there doing the book. And he's researching Manson.
Well, no, I'm sure it was at the Free Press before the Newhall Signal. But
okay. Could you have been at the Signal and yet talking to people at the LA Free Press because you had worked there?
No. I think it was quite separate. And as I said, I think I was at the Free Press first.
Right, okay. So, let's see. What's interesting about the Signal is that the son of Scott, John, was into the Kennedy assassination. How much?
I got him there.
You got him interested?
Yeah.
What? Well, how were you? How much were you? Were you reading Rampart's articles or? What?
Oh yeah, I was following it a lot.
Did you know of Mae Brussel at that point? She was.
Yeah,
not.
I knew the name.
Right, but she, you know, the Ramparts did a special issue, I think, in early '67.
I don't remember. I think actually it was more of that guy, the attorney, Mark.
Mark Lane.
Yeah.
You knew him?
I didn't know him. I knew of him.
Well, you know, Mark Lane. He was a New Yorker. The room, he had a room in Soho on maybe Spring Street. And the owner of that house that Mark Lane lived in, rented, he had that house down there when Soho was just industrial ghetto since 63. So somewhere in the late 60s, Mark Lane is staying there in the upper apartment of the building. That is the room that we did our Finnegan's Wake Society from 93 to 9 till still going on. We did our Finnegan's Wake analysis in the room where Mark Lane wrote Rush to Judgment.
I see.
And the owner of the building, Mark Murray Gross, he was the head of the society. He had been a New York lawyer working with maybe a guy named Frank Gross or Frank Ross, who started to bust the mafia. And Murray, he was the guy who came up with the idea that the mafia was doing something on Wall Street with securities, you know, laundering money through. And so he figured it out. And so therefore he had to testify against them. So he had to spend a year or two wondering whether his car would get blown up, because he lived right down Soho, which is very close to the mafia, Little Italy part.
Yeah.
So Murray eventually, he left the FBI or that world, Department of Justice, whatever he was in, but under great stress for a few years, because the mafia supposedly knew that he was the one who caught them.
Huh.
So he had an interesting story there, but he became a Joyce scholar, and that was another life for him.
Another life. Yeah, I was the one who definitely got John. And in fact, John then went to San Francisco and started a thing called a wire service called... Isn't earthly. That was another creep service.
Another
Zodiac,
creep.
Zodiac news service.
Right.
And a lot of what he did was Kennedy, and that was all me. I mean, I was around there a lot.
So were you okay, Ramparts did this special issue in early 67, and Mae Brussel didn't want to be known, but she helped do that issue, and there were people like Penn Jones, I guess Mark Lane, a lot of the early researchers. Were you that active that you knew them? Knew of them?
No.
You just knew Mark Lane mainly. You followed his work.
I followed his work, and then then John and I used to argue about it a lot because he was at that point just graduated from Stanford and was a Republican.
Hmm.
And I kept after him and after him, especially on a Kennedy issue, because that seemed to be the one that resonated. And he eventually became a bigger Kennedy
enthusiast
than me.
All right. Who did you guys decide, if you ever did, on who did it? If you had to say.
I'm sure we did, but I don't remember exactly.
You don't remember who you thought killed Kennedy?
Well, I mean, it was obvious. I assumed it had to do with the mafia.
Yeah.
You know, the regular people who were involved.
Well, mainly it was Hoover and Hoffa. Did you make the Hoover connection?
I didn't, actually.
No, Hoover's the big part. The mafia couldn't have done it without Hoover's, you know, blessing. And Hoover, when he met with Kennedy in 62, he knew Kennedy was going to fire him, but he knew that Robert and John had murdered Marilyn Monroe. So he felt justified in getting rid of them. And that's why he heard Hoffa was pissed off out to get Robert, and he was in trouble, and Hoover heard about it and said, okay, go ahead, you guys do it. And then there was like five guys, who, in my understanding of it, Hoover, Hoffa, Nelson Rockefeller, Clement LeMay, whoever that, Curtis LeMay, the crazy guy at the Pentagon,
yeah.
And then some other guy, not so known, five guys. And Nelson Rockefeller was the only one who knew all of them knew five. And that's why you'll get, oh, the CIA did it, or the FBI did it, or the mafia, or the renegades. You know, they're all in there because of these five aspects that cover American hierarchy, the American authoritarian guy.
Who is it now with Trump?
Who's behind him?
Yeah.
Well, Mae Brussel does a lot on Roy Cohen. And the Roy Cohen...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Roy Cohen was a real motherfucker, too.
And he goes back to the Nazi part of McCarthyism. You know, the Fritz Kramers, who's the guy who created Henry Kissinger and the big new Brzezinski. You know about Fritz Kramer? You ever heard of him?
No, I don't. I mean, I certainly know about Brzezinski.
Yeah, and Kissinger. But I won't go into that. We'll maybe save that for later. But the point is there... You have the Project Paperclip Nazis coming over under the symbol icon of Wernher von Braun, but a lot of other CIA hires of the old Nazi network, the Reinhard Gehlen network, were in the United States. And it's Mae Brussel's scenario that they were important in the Kennedy assassination, in the cover-up or this and that. And they also overlap with the White Russians. But who did you just...
Now I assume it's sort of a combination of Russian mafia.
Yeah, we're talking about Trump. So Roy Cohen is part of that world, that far-right world that McCarthy was the front for, and he and Cohen, you know, remains in that position all the way through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He's even running the Studio 54 scene. He's got AIDS, but he doesn't want anybody to know. And so Mae Brussel linked everybody in through Roy Cohen, and that's the world that Trump comes out of. You know, that's it.
That makes a certain... Yeah, especially when you mention Cohen, because I know he was quite close.
Yeah, he was his mentor. And, you know, the mafia would go to Roy Cohen's office, his lawyer's office, and do the different families would do their planning in his office because they were protected by, you know, lawyer-client privilege.
Right, right.
And... So they could talk all they want, and it's like he didn't hear them. You know, did he go in the other room? You know, he knew, you know, everything. And that, so when we get into the Western Gold story, we'll see if it overlaps directly with Roy Cohen, but it's the same network. Okay, so back to So you
we're
just
rambling, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were doing the Kennedy assassination. So
oh yeah.
I laid out my theory, what I think, and then
actually, I'm gonna listen to you when I play it back and say.
You didn't get it all? You want me to?
No, but don't go over it again.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little tired, but.
Okay, so you're not going to be able to go another couple hours. You're going to stop soon. Well, it depends on how I energize you, right? If you get energized.
Yeah, I think right now another couple hours would probably be more than I could cope with.
Okay, so we may be coming to the end of the first part. So we're talking about, we did the Kennedy assassination and John Newhall, and but what are your – what are your when you're at the L.A. Free Press, it's the height of the hippie scene in L.A., 67, 68, 69, and you talk about in your book, no details, before you meet Nige, you were partying a lot, going to orgies. Like, tell me some details about that.
You know, actually, I can't do it, so I don't know what that says.
You mean you don't want to name names, or what do you mean can't do
it? No, it's kind of vague.
Were you doing marijuana, LSD?
Probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're really part of the 60s because you can't remember it.
Right.
That's the old line.
Yeah, no. I guess I was screwing around a lot. I'm sure I was.
Well,
you know, I did have times in San Francisco. There was this radio disc jockey, I mean, talking about two people who couldn't disagree more, named Dave McQueen.
Yes.
Who was on a radio station, KSAN.
Yes.
And I used to stay at his house a lot. We were good friends. And he had come out to San Francisco from Los Angeles, from Texas. And he had a whole group of friends, including the singer.
Janis Joplin.
Yeah. And I was complaining one time about being horny. And he says, well, Janice kept trying to put the make on you. And I said, well, yeah, I thought she was kind of ugly. I didn't know who she was or
right.
anything like that.
Yeah, so she did not appeal to you.
No, she didn't appeal to me. I mean, I've heard her singing. It could be pretty good.
Yeah.
But,
well, where's Diane?
That might have been
a mistake.
That might have been a period when I was messing around.
Right. Now, do you think you should have gone with her, or it just didn't matter? She was too ugly for me.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been probably a one-night stand.
So, was Diane your first wife pretty?
I feel a little guilty saying that because I don't want to get Dave into trouble. He's still around somewhere up in Seattle.
Right. But
he has a great voice.
Okay.
Plus the fact, KSAN, which was this big rock and roll station, when my first book came out, The Menu, and Dave loved it, and he had me on KSAN for a couple hours.
Yes, I remember. Wasn't that like the first FM station?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember in 68, in my Zap archive, he does a show on there, plays oldies or something, or Zappa used to be interviewed as soon as that station started in around 68.
Yeah, but no, I'm sure that's how they worked. You know, there were a group of people, and I was accepted, even though I was at that point working at the Chronicle, now that I think about it.
Right.
And normally people at the Chronicle get hated because they were all trying to get to Janice, rock and roll, what are they called, the Grateful Dead, and so on. And
they were trying to get to them? The journalists?
Well, no, just to go hear, to go see. And I never was interested in trying to get tickets or to write about them or anything like that.
So you didn't help anybody?
No, I didn't, and nobody hated me as a result either. People would get very nasty, reporters, about, you know, getting to go there.
And you say you weren't hated.
Right.
Yeah.
I, because I was indifferent. I wasn't trying to get the tickets to go.
Were you fat in the 60s?
Probably.
Okay, so you got chubby early.
I think so, yeah.
Right. Now, was Diana pretty, your first wife?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So you were able to attract pretty women even though you were a fat man?
I guess so.
And my wife's looking over at me, what do you say about you? She just hears this statement, me saying that. Carolyn. I think you met Carolyn.
I have had good
luck.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, not perfect.
Is it because you're a pretty interesting conversationalist and have a lot of stuff to say?
I can't answer that.
Beg your pardon?
I said, I can't answer that.
Well, you know, your conversation. I mean, you intrigued Susan Anspach, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
You can't even remember your own life, the causes of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're...
I wish I could see Susan. I really miss her. She last I heard was off to Thailand.
And she wouldn't talk to Dustin Hoffman, an old problem there, right?
She was pissed off about it. Well, she had tried to talk to him, and she was pissed off that he sort of gave her a shine on, even though she had done a lot for his career.
Right. Gave a shine on. What's that phrase mean? Mean to ignore? I don't know that. He gave her a shine on? Did you just say?
Yeah, sort of a put down.
That's what a shine on means. Oh, okay. All right, so... We did the Kennedy assassination. What stories can you tell about the LA Free Press? Because I was reading it then and reading Bukowski's great column. It was awesome.
I'm willing to, it's just that right now I don't think I could, I know I couldn't go on for, I'm just, my mind is wandering too much.
Yeah, we need to wrap up for this phase.
But, you know, I think Sunday earlier, like Sunday maybe about noon,
I don't know if I can do Sunday. We'll see. I'll get, you know, there's no rush. Maybe.
Okay. I want to hear the tape now.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to get that sent to you. All right. But.
What would you send me? Oh, just a link.
Yeah, I'll send you the link once it's available. Let me see. Just to wrap this up. So you're doing the small paper in Newhall, the Newhall Signal.
Yeah.
And also the LA Free Press in there. And then you get a gig at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yes.
And that's the early 70s? Is that during Watergate?
Yeah.
Right.
It would be early 70s, I guess.
And so we'll pick up where you meet Nige in that period, because that's the period you meet Nige, who becomes a big factor in your life. I mean...
she does.
Yeah. And, okay, so what else... and we're talking about you're going to meet Frank Zappa, and you've got this... very involved in classical music, slightly interested in jazz and occasional pop song. But you're always going to concerts in your life.
Well, when my mom left, not as much.
Oh, okay. You didn't miss it?
No, I just didn't have the, I'd go with my mom. I was the artist's son.
Right, and what?
I didn't have to pay. I didn't have to worry about getting in, you know.
Oh, yeah. And when did she leave? Are you in San Francisco by that time?
16. I was 16.
Okay, so that's 68. So your LA Free Press days.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, and that's that. So.
And then she went to New York, where I visited her, and got her pissed off because she wanted to take me to meet that horrible right-wing woman writer. Ayn Rand.
And the columnist, the advice columnist.
Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand. Libertarian.
And I told her I didn't want to hang out with fascists.
Was your mother leaning that way?
No, but she could sometimes.
Because she was a great, believed in individual genius, right? Because she was one herself.
So. I presume.
Yeah.
I never saw her that great, but I'll take her word for it.
Yeah. Well, was her sister better?
You mean in terms of no. I was thinking of Ayn Rand not being a great genius.
No, no, I'm talking about your mother.
She definitely was a genius, and I think so was Hepzibah. They were just different players.
Right, but the
if you want to see something on Hepzibah, get a real sense of family. On YouTube, there's a documentary just called Hepzibah.
Okay.
And it's about the Bennuins and various experiences in that period.
Let me look it up just for listeners how to spell that.
And also listen to my mom. You can get her music. I don't have a documentary.
Right. How do you spell that name, Hepzibah? Can you do that?
Hepzibah, I think.
Okay, it's close. You just get in the Google it, it'll get close to it, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was saying that someone who's a, accomplished musician, they tend to be an individualist. or strong ego.
Yeah, I
ego.
Guess it's probably true.
And so they would go for a right-wing individualist kind of philosophy that Ayn Rand propagated, right?
At a certain point.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably more Ayn Rand.
That what?
Well, I don't think my mom was not a, did not like right-wing people. In fact, she had some pretty miserable experiences with McCarthyite type things and musician friends of hers who were fucked over a lot by them. So she didn't like those kind of people, but she did like Ayn Rand for whatever reason.
Right. So the
and then my mom went to London, where she lived most of her life.
Right. So your mother and her sister met a lot of people in society and all that.
Sure, and yeah. Obviously so did Yehudi.
Right. Okay, so we'll talk more about Yehudi. It's interesting, his last conversation he had with you, we'll do that later. But the so we're at the point where you're now a full-fledged journalist.
Yes.
And even though you're blacklisted, you luckily met Scott Newhall, and he hired you because of that.
Right.
And you got through it.
You know, probably in terms of meeting people, I mean, I've wondered about that. I'm sure the people I grew up around, like Hepzibah and Yehudi, yeah, I met people through them.
Right. Is there anybody that really stood out to you in the classical world?
Probably, but I'd have to think about it.
Okay, maybe we can come up with that before the next talk. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Lionel, for this, for the first part. You had a very interesting life, and we're going to try to bring more out of it. I'd like to get into stuff that's not in your books, if we can remember any of it. Other things.
Try me. I'll try to come up if I can. I just know right now I wouldn't do very good.
Okay. So what I do is I'll end the recording. Just stay on the line.